Cold Witchery is possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors. We'd like to take a moment to recognize our producer-level Patreon supporters.
Heather, Wisdom Queen,
Regina, Jen Rue of Rue and Hyssop,
Little Wren, Christopher,
Akia Branvansienak, Victoria of the Distelfink Sipshafter Verglova,
Jonathan at the Modern Southern Polytheist, Catherine,
Patrick Carroll,
Montine from Book of My Shadows, Sonara at theauburnsky.com,
Wicked Sense Etsy Shop, Moma Sarah at Conjured Cardea,
Jody, Josette,
Amy, Tanner,
Sherry, Athena Beth,
Donald, Jenny Love from Broom, Book, and Candle, and Tarsha.
To show your support and keep the show going, please consider visiting patreon.com/newworldwitchery and pledging $1 a month or whatever you can. And as always, thanks to all of our listeners.
Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
On today's episode, we have an interview with Lisa Marie Basile, author of Light Magic for Dark Times, in which we'll discuss applying folk magical practices to contemporary life. Hello, everyone. Pardon the voice, I'm just getting over a cold and I'm still a bit froggy sounding. I'm just stopping in really quickly to tell you a little bit about our guest for this episode and what this episode's about. I asked Lisa Marie Basile, whose name I probably butcher a couple of times in the recording, onto the show to talk about her book, Like Magic for Dark Times, which looks at magic from the perspective of simple rituals that can help people cope in contemporary living. What I liked about her book is that it has connections to folk magic. It draws really heavily on some spells that I know very well, for example. And while I tend not to go in for magic as kind of a psychological system alone, and that's just my opinion, of course your mileage may vary, in this book, in Lisa's book, it doesn't wind up being just a psychological system. There are really good concrete practices that work really easily for a number of different spiritual systems and worldviews without being too exclusive to any one of them. And I know it's not going to be a book for everyone's tastes. If you're really into our more history-rooted folklore shows or articles, or prefer to dig into the systems of North America, like where they're connected to the specific places that they're from, this show's not really that. But it does speak to an approach to folk magic that still depends upon the past for guidance, but then adapts in modern contemporary culture to fit the needs of a practitioner. And again, I know it's not going to be everyone's cup of mugwort or sassafras tea, but I got something out of reading your book, and I think a lot of our listeners would too. As for Lisa herself, she's an author, an illustrator, and a poet. She edits the magical/witchy/literature magazine Luna Luna. She was an absolute delight to talk with, and she even let me share one of her spells from the book, which you'll hear after the interview. So I hope you enjoy this. Sorry again for the bullfrog croaking voice and the rushed nature of this intro. The kids have a snow day today, and I've managed to quiet them for a bit with a scavenger hunt for some new books that I hid around the house, but I don't think that's going to last very long. So at any rate, here's hoping you enjoy the interview. So let's get to it. Tonight on New World Witchery, we have author Lisa Marie Basile. Lisa Marie has authored a book called Light Magic for Dark Times, which is all about rituals, magic, spells, and a lot of other things that you can do to provide magical self-care for you, for yourself, in times of trial, times of trauma, and really just kind of in general everyday situations. Her book is one that I sort of encountered almost by happenstance last year. And then since then, I have just devoured it. I really, really enjoy kind of her take on magic and her take on magic in a contemporary setting in the contemporary world. So I'm excited for her to be here with us tonight. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really, really fun and cool to be here.
Excellent. Well, we're thrilled you're here. I guess we should start with the book, Light Magic for Dark Times. Is there something unique about our current age, the sort of the dark times, that calls for magic? What compelled you to write this book?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and that's a huge question. I guess I think that we're all sort of struggling to find a sense of autonomy and meaning and mindfulness in a culture and also a world where people are being left behind and made to feel invisible, whether that's from like social situations or the political. And I think we all crave some sort of like getting back to nature or getting back to the self, or, you know, we've been more and more interested in the metaphysical. And I think there's a reason for that. It's like we're striving for connection, and magic, you know, has always come and gone. And I guess in a way it's always been here. So I think we're seeing like a natural and very normal resurgence in the interest in magic. And I especially think that's happening for marginalized people, the youth, women, any sort of group that is sort of demanding to be seen and demanding to be heard and loved. So magic has always been a tool, I think, for the oppressed, or just people who are trying to work through things themselves and not like lean into the status quo. So I think that's where our time is leaning right now. But I wrote it because I was experiencing like insane grief. I had a few deaths in the family, and I started writing grief rituals, which I would put up on my magazine, Luna Luna. And it was, you know, it was in 2017, and like the political situation was chaos, and I was just feeling like completely, completely gutted in every sense of the word. So an editor reached out to me and asked if I would want to expand on those grief rituals. And then Light Magic was born. I cannot believe I wrote 40,000 words. Because 40,000, that's hard.
40,000 very good words from what I've seen. They deal with the book.
Thank you.
Well, of course, it was definitely, like I said, I sort of jumped into it feet first. And even though, we'll maybe come back around to this, even though it's not necessarily exactly something that is in my normal wheelhouse, I was very taken in by what you're doing.
Thank you.
Well, you tackle a lot of really interesting and very weighty themes. You've got grief management and death positivity, trauma recovery, sex and body affirmation. How do you see magic as a tool particularly poised to address those issues?
Well, for me, like when I think about those weighty, heavy, very intense issues, I need something to ground me in my thoughts and also take action. So when I'm thinking about death or grief, like, you know, like everyone else, I spiral. I think, oh my God, I'm going to be sad forever. There's never going to be an end to this grief. What is out there? What is the point of all of this? What can I do to, you know, not feel horrific, but also what can I do to honor the dead? And all these questions just kind of pile on to us, I think, in those moments. So I think magic is, and I guess, you know, magic, when I say that, I mean whatever kind of magic applies to you. It gives you ritual, it gives you objects, it gives you a thought process, it gives you kind of a linear way of attacking the big issues. So, for me, it was just focusing on an idea or an image, maybe writing it down or journaling about it, lighting a candle, tapping into the elements. Maybe it was, you know, releasing something by creating something and then burning it. And that in a way allowed me to kind of like take my grief, look at it or whatever the thing was, and then release it or honor it or beautify it, whatever it needed to be. So I think, to be long-winded, it just gives us a way to approach it and make something of it, you know, turn something from nothing into something even more meaningful.
Absolutely. And you made a point there where you were talking about kind of magic and then sort of, trying to figure out kind of a definition for it. And actually, one of my favorite quotes in the book, you have a definition of magic that I think is really interesting in there. And it's just one of my favorite quotes in the book in general, which is, I've always found it risky to bloom. It takes time and work, and the process of shedding our skin is uncomfortable. But as they say, if it doesn't challenge you, there's no way it can change you. Magic does both. I believe that magic, that electric force within us and nature and the cosmos, can help us create a life that is nourishing and resilient. And that, I mean, that's such a good summary statement. Like, you don't spend a lot of time arguing about, like, what is magic, what isn't magic. You just kind of
jump
right in there. And you also make this all about, even though this is a book about self-care, it's not about self-indulgence or pampering necessarily, but genuinely facing trouble and pain and fear armed with tools that magic can provide. Why do you think it is so important to push back against some of that, especially through magic?
I mean, you know, I've been like steeped in this conversation for so long. People are like, is this a witchcraft book? Is this a self-care book? Is it a self-development book? Like, what are you going for? Are you super woo-woo? Like, I have just been thinking nonstop about this since before the book and during the book and after the book. And I feel like my ideas about all of this keep changing. And I just think it is super, super simple. Humans, well, any creature, we like comfort and we like to be, you know, made to feel real and that we matter. And when we're encountering like intense change and trauma and sorrow, or just little feelings of like self-doubt and worry, I think we just need to feel like we have some sort of stake in it or control over it. And I'm not saying like magic can give you control over everything. I'm just saying I think magic is the way that we can approach it in an organic and maybe intangible way. Because people always say like, go to therapy, you know, spend all this money to see someone, and that's fine. And I'm not begrudging that whatsoever. Or, you know, join a gym or all these things that you have to do, but there are things in between, like there are little intangibles in the cracks in the liminal spaces where I think magic falls. And that's the quiet, beautiful thing that you tap into that is like the very essence of life and the cosmos and the self and the blood and the sky and the earth. I know that's very poetic, but I hope that answers. I don't think that answered your question.
It definitely gets at something there. I mean, one of the things, you know, you talk about this tangibility factor, and you know, we talk about the idea of, you know, dirt on your hands in magic on the show a lot, and you know, making sure, you know, getting your hands dirty in magic, and in your case, it's getting your hands dirty, or you know, getting your body clean. It, you know, it is a physical. It's a very physical way to work through or with yourself and the things that you're processing, the things that you're living. So I totally get where you're coming from on that. I don't think you dodged the question in any way there.
I get lost in all of it sometimes because, yeah, I mean, also I'm only on my first cup of coffee.
I totally understand.
It's a lot. I mean, I feel like ever since this book came out, I've been examining and re-examining my beliefs and why I feel all the ways that I feel and what people have responded to me with. And it's kind of a beautiful process of how does self-care and magic work and why is it working and why does it matter? And I just think, you know, people just want to feel loved by themselves and by others.
Absolutely. And seen, and to some extent, very much seen.
Validated.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing, you know, I'm sure this is one of the things that kind of has gotten you in the crosshairs of some of those questions is you have a perspective in the book that puts the notion of religion and Godhead kind of off to the side and then focuses more on these internal processes of magic. And I'm curious, you know, why did you take that particular approach? I mean, do you work with any particular spirits? Do you see magic as something internal and sort of psychological, spiritual, both, neither? And we can always reject false dichotomies. That's a good thing. So I'm curious kind of where you are.
That is a really great question. And first of all, I approached light magic for dark times with kind of a secular attitude. I wanted it to be a book that anyone could use no matter what their background. So for me, I imagine the reader whether they are a Christian or a practicing witch or, you know, an atheist witch or someone, you know, just who's interested in something, but they're not sure what. I wanted them to be able to pick up the book and see it as a friend and see themselves reflected in it. And I didn't want anything to kind of make them feel set off that path or that the book was super specific. And I guess for me, part of that was that I have had a really, really long road in terms of my own beliefs and how magic fit into that. I grew up Catholic, very Roman Catholic, mm-hmm. in a Sicilian family. And I early departed those views, but some of that like ritual and grandiosity stayed with me. And I discovered Wicca at a young age, and I cycled through some of that and cycled out of it mm-hmm. because I didn't feel a connection with some of what I was learning. Then I found myself kind of staring down the abyss and thinking, oh God, I think I'm an atheist. And then back again. And it took, I'm 33 now, mm-hmm. took some time. And now I feel mostly like earth-based spiritual practices. I think I'm sort of a chaos witch. Mm-hmm. I don't really use a label. I don't believe in gods and goddesses. I don't work with them. I use them as archetypes often mm-hmm. in my journaling routines. Like I often turn to like Hecate and I think about what she symbolizes, and she very much is an archetype and a symbol that I carry very deeply with me day in and day out. Also, I'm a Scorpio, so she's very in tune with who I am. I really mm-hmm. appreciate the straddling of the light and the dark and transformative and just being able to go deep. And so I really approach it like that. And for me, my gods are water and the earth and the self and the cosmos. And I very, very much believe that that's, you know, something I hold dearly as a meaningful experience for my life, but I didn't want to infuse the book too much with that. So, I have zero judgment. Like, I love everybody's beliefs and I honor everyone's beliefs. And I think there's a lot to be said for people who do work with deities and gods and goddesses, and some of my best friends do. I just wanted to make sure that this book was accessible to everyone and was like a beginner's tool guide to little bits of magic that one could practice that kind of makes you feel in tune with yourself and the world around you. I didn't want to jump too hard into certain things, but maybe a future book will.
Sure. No, I get that. And you're right. It does sort of lend to that open door policy, that sort of open access that you provide, where you're not limiting it too strictly in terms of, you know, what entities are being worked with and things like that. It reminds me a little bit in that way of, there's a book called Jambalaya by Louisa Teich, which she does a lot of. It's a much older book, but it's, she does a lot of these sort of like rituals, largely rooted sort of in African American women's experiences. But it's that same, like, it's very open. You don't have to follow any one specific path to make sense of that. So,
wow, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah. So a lot of your rituals in this book are internal, but you also, of course, something I love, make use of some frequent folk magic. So for example, you have this really solidly folk magic rooted abundance spell where you have a petition and you put it at the bottom of a bowl full of coins and then feed it daily with new coins. And I love that. I love that kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Why do you think folk magic rituals are so effective for this kind of self-care or, you know, goal setting or, addressing the needs that we have? What is it about that folk magic specifically that works so well?
Well, you know, I kind of think folk magic is literally all around us, and some of mm-hmm. us just don't acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think back to my grandmother who, oh God, she would be rolling in her grave if she heard me say this, and I say this with complete respect, but, you know, she was a devout Roman Catholic Sicilian mm-hmm. like 4-foot woman, and she was so fucking scary. Sorry, am I allowed to curse?
Absolutely. Yes, we have explicit.
Okay. Okay. Such a scary lady. And she would do things like, oh God, she would like cut her hair and put it in a box and bring it out and show it to us and be like, this is how you keep your youth alive forever. How do you think I got to 90 years old? Like, she did these little things, and then she'd just act like nothing about it. But of course, you know, she came from Sicily. There was a lot of that, like, Italian folk magic mm-hmm. interwoven into her Catholic belief system. She kept altars all over her house and would, like, write intentions and wishes and prayers, and roll them up into, like, little scrolls and set them on fire or put incense around them or, like, put them into little jars. And she anointed them, like, and for a long time, I didn't really see the connection between what she was doing. I just thought she was my kind of quirky grandmother. Mm-hmm. But I realized, and you know, it was really about folk magic. And mm-hmm. I think that's why that's why it's so important, I think, in so many people's lives and why so many people can turn to it. Because we do these simple little everyday rituals growing up, or maybe we watched our mothers or our grandparents do it, and they root us to our culture. They root us to our personal familial beliefs. They root us to, like, the little weird tics that we have as human beings that, like, mean something to us. And once you start looking at those behaviors and rituals, habits, and little quirks as magical, you are now infusing them with meaning, and you're putting energy into them, and you're turning them into something that could create change. So, you know, we don't need, like, a book to tell us this, this, and this will equal this outcome. What we need is to believe that whatever we're doing, whether it's something really basic like collecting coins in a bowl or something elaborate and ceremonial, that what we're putting into it, you know, has the power to create something. And everyone has that. Like, everyone has these little tidbits that we do growing up. And I think that's, like, the most beautiful thing. And there could be books and books and books and books and books and books forever written on all of those things. But really, they're just kind of personal and weird and messy and chaotic and awesome.
I would read every single one of the books written about
I would
that.
Too.
I love them so
I would
much.
Too. I'd sit there with, like, a box of popcorn, just like, tell me all your things.
I know. It's so wonderful. I would totally
so
hang
beautiful.
Out with you. It is. It's beautiful. I would totally hang out with your grandma too. So
she would scare the absolute shit out of you. But
I would enjoy that experience. So.
That's good. Yeah. It was pretty cool. The altar mm-hmm. thing is something I've carried over in my own way.
And, you know, you talk about the point about that sort of roots you to your familial culture, which I 100% see. In the book, you make a really good point about demonstrating respect when you're drawing upon practices, especially from other cultures and groups, especially if those groups are trying to keep their culture closed in some way or for some reason. And, you know, we know that some exchange is inevitable, but how do you navigate that sort of tricky tightrope of respect and magical influences or, you know, how do you adjust or address new information when it comes in? You know, we had this big kerfuffle over the overharvesting of white sage that came up because of the Sephora kit, or these humanitarian issues surrounding crystals that people buy in shops. You know, so how do you roll with those punches, so to speak?
Well, I will say, like, it really took some, it took being pointed out to a while ago to realize it. Like, for a long time, we weren't having these discussions, I think, as a magical community or as a community in general. I think for a long time, like, white privilege and cultural privileges just kind of were the norm and very much in many ways still are. So I think finally people realize, like, you know, I think we need to start listening. And the voices were saying back, like, please, you don't understand. Like, this is a closed cultural practice. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I probably learned it too late. I was using terminology and objects years ago that probably weren't mine to use. So I'm very grateful for those conversations. And now what I do is I do try not to partake in any sort of closed cultural practice. I mean, if it happens and I don't know about it, it's usually total ignorance. Mm-hmm. If I'm buying something or saying something, I guess the way to navigate all of that is to A, be aware, B, talk to people, listen, learn, read. So you can, you know, kind of be up to date on what people are talking about. And but mostly it's about, like, you know, I think it's about, like, doing your research when you go into a certain ritual, or if you're buying something, like, do your research. Where does it come from? Why does it matter? Who used it first? Mm-hmm. And it might sound like a lot of work, but if you're going to be doing something, it should be done with love and care. And that's the energy you want to put into it. And you don't want to put in the energy of, like, neglect and ignorance. And I don't think many people mean to, of course, but, like, if I'm going to buy a crystal, try to source them ethically. I try to see, like, you know, what the seller's deal is. Where are they getting these crystals? Like, are they using unethical means for it? Like, are certain crystals connected to a certain culture? And if so, like, how are they used? And how does that culture feel about people using that crystal, for example? And then just navigating it from there, knowing that I at least put the time in to do my best. And if you think about it, like, it's unavoidable in some ways. There's mm-hmm. always going to be crossover. It's always right. going to be a little bit messy. But just being, like, open-minded and being willing to change and amend and adapt, I think that goes a long way.
Absolutely. And not, you know, one of the first reactions people have when they hear something like that is they get very defensive and not, yeah. they shut down the voice that's trying to say, hey, wait a second. And I think that openness to conversation is so, so crucial.
Yeah. It's better to just listen than to be a sore loser about it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah. So one of the other influences that I tracked throughout the book, and I love, as somebody who, you know, teaches a lot of English courses and things like that, you frequently include poets and poetry in the fabric of your magic and your writing, and that comes out in your work as an editor in Luna Luna as well. You know, Light Magic includes poems from Sappho, quotes from E.E. Cummings and Philip Larkin. What is this synchronicity? What are you seeing as this link between poetry and magic, or any other artistic process, since a lot of your rituals have, you know, arts practice sort of as their base?
I mean, the thing is, like, I've been a poet for the better part of a decade in terms of, like, publishing poetry. Poetry is my baby. It's my home. Like, it is truly everything to me. And when I got the opportunity to write this book, I thought to myself, like, okay, I do want to write about self-care. I care about it. And I already do write about it in some ways for Luna Luna. And I do want to write about magic, of course. But I also don't want to leave a part of me behind. And I just thought to myself, like, I don't have to write the book in a way that leaves any variable out. I just want to be me, and me is a poet, and I'm going to include poetry. And I told my editor, and she was like, yeah, go for it, which was crazy because I expected her to be like, well, that's a little random. Like, maybe we should stick to the trail. And I'm glad that she let me. I just think poetry in itself is the most magical thing in the world. And I could, like, go on like a dork about this for hours, but poetry is the most expressive and most like fluid of all of the literary arts, I think. You are reading things, but you're also reading between the lines. You are reading words, but you're also reading blank spaces. You're burying codes and ideas and concepts into language that aren't necessarily there when you look just read the sentence or the stanza. It's very much like a space of in between. It's very liminal. It's the kind of thing that, like, you can fall into and gaze at and question, and then come away after a 10th reading and learn something new. It's just not all given to you up front. So for me, it's filled with these dark, beautiful spaces. And I think that's why it's so magical. It's like you can infuse it with anything that you need it to be for yourself. Also, there's, like, the musicality of it. It feels like a chant, sort of. There's a rhythm to it that I feel like you can get into, like, if you read certain poems, like a very meditative mindset. So I just think it's got all those, like, delicious little factors about it. So I just wanted to make sure that, like, my little brand of magic was woven through the book. And I think there's a huge crossover between readers and writers and magic. Like, we all want to create something. We're all naturally very creative. And I think a lot of us are very, what's the word when you create something spontaneous, like improvisational. So that's what poetry is. It's very much like a spontaneous burst of like energy and creativity. And I think the same thing for magic making for many of us. I just wanted people to find beauty in language. And I want to do another book on this whole entire topic. So hopefully someone will give me a book deal.
Well, you do have a book of poetry, I believe, right? That's either out or just about to come out?
Yeah, it just, Nymphalepsy is a little book of poetry. It just came out in November. And it is co-written by myself and another poet called Alyssa Marhart Goldstein. Mm-hmm. And it's like a tiny, tiny little handheld book that is like a little book of secrets and confessions. Mm-hmm. And each page feels sort of like a spell cast. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I love that. That's fantastic.
It's a tiny book. Thanks.
You mentioned the poems and poetry are sort of able to be in that liminal space and even sort of get into the darkness a little bit. And, you know, this book is called Light Magic for Dark Times. And so I think people sometimes hear that and they maybe would dismiss it out of hand just based on that idea of light magic. But
totally,
you don't leave the shadow side out. You have rituals that tackle embracing your shadow side. Even if it hungers for things that aren't good for you, like my favorite thing is that you mentioned, like, sometimes you have bloodlust and, you know, who doesn't want to drink celebratory toasts from the skulls of their enemies from time to time?
Right.
One of your spells, that really struck me in that sort of working with the shadow side of things was this idea of building your own underworld. And that's an idea I don't think people consider all that much. They address, you know, personal cosmology, and sort of think about, you know, what gods, what goddesses, what pantheon, but, you know, this is something different. This is, you clearly think, that having a defined dark space is vital. And I love that. And I'm curious, you know, what led you to that and what, you know, what, why is that so important, do you think?
You know, I guess just to start off with going back to the title, that's one thing that I've been running up against. I see like random comments on Instagram, like, oh, this book looks like such a woo-woo, like pseudo, pseudo witchcraft, like crazy pop psychology, pink explosion. And I totally understand it. So I can understand why someone would look at this book and think, oh, it's like probably like rah, 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 happy times. Yay, yay, yay. And I get it. And that's fine. I guess it's going to happen. But yeah, I absolutely didn't want to leave the shadow out. You know, for me, I think the light and darkness are one. They're like twins and both of them do different things and both of them matter and they can't exist without the other. I think we all basically understand that. But I've been playing in the dark far longer than I've been playing in the light, so to speak, I guess. I naturally feel comfortable in the shadows. I feel very comfortable thinking about the darker things in life. And I don't know if that's a product of like childhood trauma and just being able to like navigate those spaces and make meaning out of them. Or if it's just a natural, you know, interest I don't know if it's just, you know, some people lean into it a little bit more naturally. So I've always felt like one foot in that world and one foot in a world of happiness and joy. Mm-hmm. Not that darkness can't be, but for me, it's often a place where I think about jealousy and I think about, you know, sex desires outside of, you know, so-called norms, and a place where I think about, you know, rage and self-hatred and self-doubt and all those nasty little demons that have a place in our bodies and our minds throughout our lives that we work to manage. And for me, like, there's no point in saying, okay, this is going to just go away. I'm going to just meditate enough and do yoga enough and be a happy person enough. And suddenly I won't feel jealous or rage. It just doesn't really work like that. And I think it's okay to just lean into it and be like, you know, I'm human. I have multitudes and that's fine. So I think that building the underworld practice came around when I was a kid. My dad said something to me, like, he, I don't remember what it was exactly, and I keep trying to remember because it would be pretty cool if I could. But he said something like, you know, take all those dark thoughts that you have, because I had a lot of nightmares as a kid, a lot of weird fears, and he would be like, put them in a little box, and then you can open the box when you feel like it, and then sometimes you close the box, and that's okay. You can put the box away, and that stuck with me for a long time. And it's kind of crazy because he's like the darkest person in the world, and he truly embraces all things like occult and horror and sadness. And so I guess I learned it from him, but that technique has always stayed with me. So I wanted to impart that to the readers, to just have a place that you can go, that you can call your own, that you can visit, where you're allowed to embrace those dark selves, and you're also allowed to leave them there, and you can honor them and reject them at the same time. Or you can embrace them and also say, you know, today's not a good day for you. Like, I can't be feeling self-doubt today, but I'm totally down to acknowledge you another time. Because I hate this idea of, like, either or. Like, you have to get rid of this facet of yourself. It's like, I think that we can all just sort of manage things and honor them at the same time. But, you know, to each his own, of course.
No, absolutely. No, and I mean, I think you explained that remarkably well. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Moving maybe back sort of the other direction, when it comes to magical self-care, what advice do you find yourself generally giving people who are new to this sort of magical or magical influenced practice? What are the kind of the first steps that you point them towards?
Well, I say usually something like, you know, make 1 hour a week for yourself and do something that gets you out of your head and into your body. Something, it doesn't have to be physical, because I recognize not everyone can like do something physical, but it might mean like wash your hands in some essential oil, or maybe it means like tending to a plant, or maybe it means like building a mood board with images that that you want to manifest for the future for yourself, like images of success or beauty or happiness or love. Just an hour where you are focusing your energy. If you're washing your hands, for example, maybe you're thinking, I'm cleansing myself of X, Y, or Z. And then maybe you do a little self-pampering afterward. Maybe you sit in silence and you think about the release of those things. Just like really, really basic rituals where you're just connecting with your body and you are just letting everything else go. And I say an hour because I think when we think about self-care and ritual, we think, oh God, I've got to learn everything and do everything and have all these objects and all these, I have to dive right in and I have to just, it's not going to be great unless I'm perfect, but you don't need more than an hour. Just be with yourself and maybe pick like one thing you want to focus on, whether it be the elimination of something negative or the intention of something really good. And just give yourself that 1 hour. You don't have to do any more. And maybe it can grow from there. Maybe you amass like a little collection of candles or crystals that you use the next time you do this. Something that, you know, feels good to you. A crystal that when you hold feels vibrant and positive. Or a candle that you burn only specifically for these times. And I guess, you know, that's a whole nother thing. Like, I know people don't return to candles often, but I think for the purposes of like basic self-care, that's okay. To have like a dedicated little toolbox of things that make you feel good. I guess that's my piece of advice.
Okay. I'm going to ask a difficult question because it's going to be like asking you to pick a favorite child, but do you have any favorite spells in the book or ones that you use the most often? And, you know, are there spells in here that scare you sometimes as well?
Definitely. The one that I return to because it's the first one I ever wrote was a bathing ritual for moving through feelings of grief. That was the one where you get into a bathtub, or if you can't get into a bathtub, you can just use some sort of water. And I write, like, to think of the grief as an organ, and to, like, to think of nourishing it in that water, and just being with the grief. And I think there's a white candle included. There's some essential oils. I think I include a black obsidian for that, which is optional, mm-hmm. and a photograph of someone that's passed on. And for me, like, I don't know why, but in the past few years, a few people have continued just passing on. And so I keep returning to it necessarily so, but also I've been using it for just general feelings of grief, whether it's like the grief after grief, where I like still can't get rid of my sorrow, or just like self grief, like maybe, you know, getting older, feelings of mortality, all of those little things. So I return to that one a lot. And let me see, for ones that scare me, it's usually like, it's usually anything in the shadow work chapter, like the ritual for illuminating your shadows. There's mm-hmm. one ritual I wrote where you light a candle to illuminate each of your kind of, well, I call them shadows, but it really just means anything that you're feeling that maybe you don't want to be feeling. Mm-hmm. So I'll sit and I'll put 8 or 10 candles around me, and each of them will symbolize something, usually to do with something I need to get rid of, like an ego issue or a self doubt issue. And I guess ego and self doubt are hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So sitting there and lighting each one up and sitting with it. And sometimes I just want to be like, fuck no, I don't want to think about this. And I've like got some feedback from a few readers about that one. And they're like, yeah, that's the scary one, sitting there and sitting in your like muck. But once you emerge from it, I mean, it can't get any worse. You've already been there. Except, you know, sometimes it takes a few times going back and
right.
really sitting with it.
Yeah, some of these are not one and done. They definitely require sort of a maintenance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're just human.
Absolutely. But magical humans, and that's the best
We're part. Magical humans. We are, exactly. I mean, we're capable of incredible things.
Absolutely. So, you know, what other projects do you have on your horizon? What are your next steps with magic or spellcraft, ritual, poetry, art?
I have a few projects that I hope will come to fruition. Right now, I'm a few days behind, actually, so I should be totally straight up with you. I was supposed to release it a few days ago, but I had a cold and I got run down. But I'm releasing 3 downloadable ebooks. Mm-hmm. Like, there will be free options, and then there will be 4 a small purchase options. About their journaling experiences. So they're 4 and 6 weeks, and they deal heavily in ritual, shadow work, and archetype. Mm-hmm. So there'll be like an expansion on some of the stuff in light magic, because, you know, everything is one page in this book. So I really wanted to dive way deeper into some of the things that I included in light magic. And one is a writing-based magical journaling experience, which is just largely like journaling prompts, and there's some poetry too, so mm-hmm. it goes way deeper into the writing magic. And then if all goes well in the universe, which I just hope so much, I could be working on a book about the intersection of writing and magic, and writing as a magical tool throughout the years, and also how to use writing in your everyday magical life. And I don't know, we'll see. I hope that book, is given life, but if not, I'll find a way to get it out there anyway.
we'll cross our fingers for you. And I mean, obviously we've got some rituals that we can draw from for that too. So,
oh, thank you. Totally.
And so, I know people can find you at your website, which is just your name, which is lisamariebasile.com. Are there other ways that people can get in touch with you, or other ways that people can find out more about what you're doing and your work?
Yeah, absolutely. You can visit Luna Luna magazine. That's the magazine that I edit, and I have a whole brilliant staff of editors, and there's a billion writers over there that do incredible work. So lunalunamagazine.com. We have a whole section devoted to the magical and the witchy, and then a section dedicated to arts and identity. And to find me, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook. I'm pretty responsive. Love to talk to you guys. I think that's pretty much about it. But I'm always up to chat magic and writing and all sorts of things.
Excellent. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for being with us. Our guest tonight has been Lisa Marie Bazile. I keep feeling like I'm pronouncing it the correct way and then not, but...
you have pronounced it beautifully and wonderfully. And if it makes you feel any better, half of my family pronounces it differently. Do not worry.
Okay, good.
Thank you so much.
I'm in good company.
it's perfect.
She is the author of Light Magic for Dark Times, More Than 100 Spells, Rituals, and Practices for Coping in a Crisis. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. This is wonderful. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you so much. It was my honor, truly.
A Practice for Building Your Own Underworld. From Light Magic for Dark Times by Lisa Marie Bazile. Does the title of the spell feel a little heavy, a little impossible? I couldn't tell you how to connect with the underworld in a real way, because we all have different beliefs. But this practice can help you create a symbolic connection to that place of death, darkness, and secrets. In this practice, you'll build your own underworld where you can go to grieve when you want to get rid of something, or to store your negativity, for eternity, or even for a little while. It can be a place you visit regularly. Materials: a mason jar with a screw top lid, a handful of stones, obsidian or smoky quartz will do too. Whenever you have a dark thought, anger, grief, existential despair, hatred for your job, fear, you'll want to create a place for it, somewhere it doesn't interfere with your everyday world. This place is inside your mason jar. It's your own little representation of the underworld. Find a stone to represent a feeling you'd like to say goodbye to or bury or keep out of the light. Place it in your jar and say, "In my underworld, I place this feeling." Name the feeling. You might choose to place feelings of insecurity or grief in your underworld. Each time you put a stone into the jar, concentrate on pouring that energy in with it. Every stone that you place inside your jar is an encapsulation of those feelings or energies. Make sure you're able to close the lid tightly. When your underworld jar is full, cleanse the stones under the moon and start again. We'd like to thank our guest, Lisa Marie Bazile, for being with us on New World Witchery. We highly appreciate her spending her time answering some of our questions, talking about her book, Light Magic for Dark Times, and sharing some of her thoughts and ideas on contemporary magical practice and folk magic's place within that as well, which I think is always a good and interesting topic, because we'd like to think of folk magic as something a long time ago sometimes, and it's not. It's something that is still everywhere around us and that we are still developing and still changing and creating. And so it's, you know, I like to see it as a living tradition. So that the book very much kind of falls in line with that. You can find out more about Lisa's work through her website, which we'll link in the show notes. We'll also put a link to the book as well, which I do highly recommend. It's something that was a little outside of my wheelhouse when I bumped into it, and I wound up reading it and really, really enjoying a lot of the things in there. If you have feedback for us or things that you'd like to share with us, you can always email us at compassandkey@gmail.com. We do love hearing from you. Don't forget to follow us at Twitter and Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram as well. We do have a Pinterest page called The Old Broom, if you want to check that out. And we, of course, have our YouTube channel where we have lots of videos on folk magic. We have videos that talk a little bit about pop culture overlapping with magic as well. We do a lot of our contest announcements there, things like that. So make sure that you are following that YouTube channel to kind of get the most out of your New World Witchery experience. And then, of course, you can always leave us a voicemail at our hotline, which is 442-999-4824. That's 442-99-WITCH, if that helps you a little bit. We are super appreciative of all of your support, all of the things that you send into us. If you have things that you're interested in us doing, please don't ever hesitate to send us ideas for show topics. We love getting ideas from you all. We also love getting support from our patrons at Patreon. If you would be interested in supporting our show, supporting our work at New World Witchery, you can do so by going to patreon.com/newworldwitchery. Throw $1 a month into the hat or whatever you can. We are always highly appreciative of any support that we get, and you can get some cool rewards there as well as part of that. If that's not kind of in your wheelhouse, we totally get that too. Any kind of liking, sharing, spreading the word about us is always welcome. Leaving reviews at iTunes and any place where you get a podcast, that is super helpful too. And then you can also think about if you're a regular book buyer, you like buying books, and you especially like audiobooks, check out our connection with audible.com, which is we have an Audible trial program. You visit audibletrial.com/newworldwitchery. You get a free trial of Audible. You can download over 180,000 titles, including some that I actually narrate. I'm not saying I narrate them well, but some of them I think I do. Some of them I think are really, really fun. So definitely check those out. And if you do that subscription, it does help support the show. Even if you choose not to continue, even if you choose to cancel your subscription, it still actually helps support us, and you still get to keep a free audiobook once that trial is over. So, again, audibletrial.com/newworldwitchery does help us out. I think that's it for this time around. We'll be back again soon with more folk magic from the New World, talking more about all sorts of stuff. We've got lots of great interviews lined up coming up in the coming months. Cool topics all around. I should also mention, if you're hearing this, this is probably out after our first episode of a new podcast that Lane and I are working on, which is going to be called Myth Taken, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast. So if you're a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and you're a fan of hearing us talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which we have occasionally kind of done on this show, and you want more of that, please check that out. It's definitely worth taking a listen to. That's it for us this time. Thank you so much for listening, and be well.